When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello everyone, it's the 199th episode of GigPod. We are one away from the promised land of episode 200, but of course nothing will happen. And this is the first of the GigPod Rewind series. Will it be the last? Quite possibly, but you can all let us know if you want another one, if you do make it through the first 5 minutes of myself, Stevie, and the main man Rizzo, discussing the madness that was the 114th season of competitive football in Scotland. Yes, we're going to be talking about season 2010-2011. Rizzo, are your notes like Chris Jericho's The List of Jericho, fucking back down memory lane for what we can possibly agree was still to this day the most bonkers ever in good old Scottish football?
Hello, Stevie. Hello, everyone. No, I've just wrote the words Neil Lennon on paper 100 times. All wanting no play, meet Neil Lennon, a dull boy. That's what I've wrote for my notes.
Reed, so remind the listeners, what happened the season before this? For any Celtic fans who may have had their brains rotted by TikTok or social media, what happened in 09-10?
Well, let's see. We appointed that wonderfully droll, fun, not miserable manager, Tony Mowbray, who was going to bring the real Celtic back and play exciting attacking football, who then lost his job in, I think, March, after a 4-0 defeat away to St Mirren. And then who replaced him? Yes, Neil Lenny Lennon, who had been a sort of assistant manager under Gordon Strachan and then was sort of punted to a youth team sort of role when Tony Mowbray came in. But he ended up getting the job. He won every league game, managed to lose a Scottish Cup semi-final to Championship Ross County 2-0, a truly humiliating defeat. But he still got the permanent manager's job at the end of that season, probably thanks to a Q&A type thing he'd done with Peter Lowell, where the two of them charmed the fans. I don't know if you remember this. I think I asked you about this before, and you said you didn't. But the two of them charmed the fans into Lenny becoming Celtic manager. So, Peter Lowell, I wonder what happened to him.
No, I don't remember that. Although, here's one for you. Do you remember the big furor on forums at the time? There was more than one forum as well. The only forum I tend to look at now is KDS, but there was a few at the time, and every forum were going mad at the fact that Lennon under Mowbray, like, I remember you saying he was like appointed as like a youth coach or something, but do you remember there was a game at Ibrox and Lennon was told he had to travel separately, he couldn't go on the bus for it?
He should have been Subway loyal, Subway Lenny.
I know we're using new software and all that here, but I was just going to put that terrible part down to that then, John. Aye,
that was a brilliant joke. But no, I remember that people were annoyed about that because Lenny was of course a Celtic hero, a legend. He'd give it all for the club. It was before he turned into the Lenny we know and love nowadays, who I've been told actually Fact fans could be returning to Scottish football at Ross County. So, but aye, people were going on ridiculous when Lenny had to make his own way to Ibrox. Wonder if he sat in with the fans as well.
See, the other day on the pod for 198, you were calling me Mr. Celtic, right? But do you know that at the end of that 08-09 season, I didn't know you at the time, but I told so many people I could see it happening. After we didn't strengthen in January, I just knew it was coming, and I knew that that team were going to run out of steam, and we had 2-0-0 draws that effectively ended our hopes of the title, and Rangers ended up winning the first in three seasons up at Tannadice. And I remember when we drew 0-0 with Hearts, I said I'm not doing it next season, but I gave my season ticket away to someone else, of course in my name, but I just said I'm not going to a game that season. I was scunnered by the way it ended. I just knew that we were going to appoint Mowbray. It was definitely the wrong man for it. I can't remember who I was screaming for at that time, but I just said Mowbray was definitely the wrong man for it. Turned out to be true, but also I wasn't happy at that. I would have loved it if he could prove me wrong. But yeah, I think the biggest shot there before we go into all that, John, is the fact that I gave up my season ticket for a season at 102. I was not Mr. Celtic. I turned my back on that club that I love.
Interestingly enough, I was going to give up my season ticket for 09-10, but I thought, oh, I'll give it a try. Tony Mowbray couldn't be as boring as Gordon Strachan was at the end of his last season. So I still had my season ticket, but I stopped going to games weeks before the season finished. Although I did go to that one over Rangers, the meaningless game, when I think Lee Naylor and Mark Antone, fortunate even, easy for me to say, scored the goals on a Wednesday night. I think Kenny Miller scored for Rangers. Great guy. The defeat to Ross County did put a huge dampener on the prospect of Lenny getting the job, because, I mean, we were deservedly beaten 2-0. It wasn't it like when they beat us in the League Cup under Ronnie, when we had a guy like sent off. I think Effie Ambrose got sent off in like the first 10 minutes. And this was a deserved embarrassing defeat. And yet, Lenny got the job. And to be fair to Lenny, I bet you didn't expect to hear that. He actually done very good in season 10-11 up until the very, very end with it. In a typical Celtic in those days manner, fell to pieces in a heartbreaking fashion.
John, see, get into that season, 2010-2011. What did you do that summer to distract yourself from the mess that was the previous season? I think I went to Athens. I remember going there for like 10 days, just drinking so much Mythos and just stuffing my face with that Saganaki. It's like that fried cheese. Oh, brilliant. I love it.
If I gave up my season ticket, I was going to go on holiday, but I decided to have one more go, and I gave up my season ticket, I think, 3 years later. And I don't regret that, of course. But no, I never done anything as exciting as drinking loads of booze in Greece. So, sadly, you win that one.
Here's a bit of trivia for you. The first Instagram posts were made in July 2010 before Celtic kicked off the pre-season. What an application that is. And John, we're on it.
We are on it indeed, and you can follow us on it at GigPod. What a plug.
Anyway, as I said, there was a lot of outgoings. Artur Boric, my favourite Celtic goalkeeper, went to Fiorentina. And it was like 1.7 million he went for. He started to phone it in that last season, didn't he? Although he was absolutely tremendous at Ibrox. The game we get beat 1-0, didn't deserve to be in the losing side. He was just outstanding. He just rolled back the years for that one. I mean, there was a couple of games against Rangers he genuinely just played like as if he'd been pissed the night before. But he was outstanding that game. The departure that pretty much funded all our incoming signings, John, was Adam Egede when he went to Spartak Moscow for 9.5 million at the time.
Good on him for taking the risk to go and play abroad. I mean, did it work out for him? Maybe. I don't think he had the career that everybody expected, because for years he was like Celtic's main man. Our tactics for a lot of time under Strachan was give the ball to Aiden and see what he could do. So it was good money for us. I could understand why we did it, because it had to fund a rebuild, and it was a big rebuild that was needed. But I don't know if really Aidan McGeady, I don't know, what he'll look back on his career. I mean, he played a lot of times for Ireland, he won a lot of trophies for Celtic, but I don't know if he ever went to that mythical next level that he looked like he was going to when he like first came into the Celtic team when he was, I think, 16 or 17. He was a good player, but he just didn't turn out to be as good a player, I think, as everybody hoped.
And what about Boric then? Obviously, I was talking about the fact that he was my favourite ever Celtic goalkeeper, still is, but going to Fiorentina for just under 2 million. It was a criminally low fee because he played football, John, for like the next 6 or 7 seasons as well. In fact, no, maybe more than that. He played for another 10 years, did they not? He went to Southampton and he was at Legia Warsaw as well after Fiorentina.
You've got to remember he wasn't anywhere near as good as he was. I mean, I think his best days were at Celtic, even though he did end up getting a move to the wonderful English Premier League after leaving us. His best days definitely were at Celtic. He was an amazing goalie for Celtic. I mean, the only one I've seen that's been anything like on his level since then is Fraser Foster, which shows how good a player Boric was for us. But no, I mean, his best days were behind him. His last hurrah really was that game at Ibrox where we lost in injury time, which was a right sittinger. I mean, we probably could have got more money for him, but I think it was for the best that he moved on. Although, I mean, he is a cult hero. Maybe next time we win the league, he should present the league trophy. That'd be a good laugh.
Completely neglected to mention when I was doing the notes on this as well, and this is maybe a testament to how forgettable it was. 2010, John, we had the World Cup.
We did. It wasn't very exciting, I have to say. The final wasn't as exciting as the final last year anyway, which is one of the best games of football I've ever seen. I'm not sure how many Celtic players were in it. That's something I suppose we can talk about.
Chad Uri, who'd already actually signed at the start of July, he was from Freiburg and he was representing South Korea. But Efren Juarez as well, highly rated, from Pumas in Mexico. And we signed him. Out of all the players that we actually brought in, he was the most expensive. We got him for 3 million, I think it was. It might have just been rising to 4. We already had Key, who would have been playing as well, am I right?
Don't forget, we also had someone playing in the World Cup final that had played at Celtic the season before, Edson Braffhead.
A great player.
No, it wasn't very good. But no, I mean, that World Cup wasn't very exciting. I mean, the only interesting thing about the final was the Dutch players trying to kick the Spanish players off the park, but it wasn't a very good game at all. And as usual, Scotland won the day.
I think this was at a time when, like pre-YouTube compilations, right? You didn't actually have the ITK social media accounts saying how much they knew a player and how good they were going to be. Like, you actually had to research the player via forums, and there was Anorax as well, who followed the lower league English football. We got Gary Hooper for Scunthorpe, though. And I do remember seeing a lot of rave reviews about him on like the Scunthorpe forums. And I think as well there was like a English Football League show was shown on like Channel 5 at the time. All the goals that he scored was like primarily just tap-ins as well. Like after Scott McDonald, we were missing like a good old-fashioned penalty box striker. He had excellent reviews. There was a lot of good write-ups about him. He was the player that I was excited by the most.
I thought he would be a good player. I mean, I always thought it was a gamble signing a player for the lower leagues in England. It always is. But ironically enough, the player that I was most infused about was a player that we signed from the lower leagues in England, Joseph Joel Edley. Because he was a player that, I mean, like, big clubs in England wanted to sign. Not your usual sort of numpty teams. And we managed to get him on a free, which I don't think Cardiff were very happy about. But, I mean, I thought, this is going to be a great signing. He's a guy that is wanted by clubs. He's like young at the start of his career. He'd been excellent for Cardiff, who I think had beaten the playoff final the season before he signed for Celtic. So, I mean, they were obviously a club on the up. But no, he was a player I was looking forward to seeing. And also, this might shock people because what he's more known for these days, Anthony Stokes. He'd been linked with Celtic for years and years, of course, when he played for Falkirk. When he played for Arsenal and was in loan at Falkirk, he scored a ton of goals and done a medical, in fact, at Celtic. And he ended up not signing. It took him years, I think like 3 years later, to finally go his move to Celtic. And it has to be said, his partnership with Gary Hooper, which we'll probably talk about later, was absolutely brilliant. And he might be a numpty. In fact, he is a numpty. No nipies about it. But Anthony Stokes scored a lot of important goals for us. He stayed too long, but he was a big player for us. So I think it was those two, really, that I was most looking forward to seeing. You forget some of these players that left. I'm just looking at the list here on that good old website, Wikipedia. Darren O'Dea, who is, of course, at Celtic now, he left on loan to go to Ipswich. Well, that shows how weird that in the 9-10 season was at Celtic when we sent our captain out on loan to Middlesbrough. Just bizarre, really, although, I mean, it did end up making Bruni the captain, and that obviously ended well for everybody. I saw that Killian Sheridan also moved on that summer. He went to CSK Sofia. Noted Trumpist Dominic Servi went to Dundee on loan. Josh Højvæld, I mean, even left. Mark Crosas left as well. It was a really big turnover of players.
Take your mind back to pre-season of 2010. We get beat off Philadelphia Union. We lost to Man United on the US tour as well. We did beat Seattle Sounders. We drew with Sporting Lisbon. And then we beat Lincoln City. Well, it was like a Celtic assembled 11. Beat Lincoln City. But then it was the Emirates Cup, wasn't it, that everybody was all talking about. That was at the start of August. And it was, of course, 4 days after we lost to Braga. Braga beat us 3-0 in the Champions League first leg qualifier. But yeah, the Emirates Cup, John, we drew 2-2 with Lyon, and we beat 3-2 off Arsenal. But that was like, a lot. I know the season before, the famous winners of that Wembley Cup. But for some reason, like, I mean, I remember so many Celtic fans went down to London for that. Like, if it was nowadays, it would be even more, of course, and people would be taking photos to say, I was there. That was a massive event. Like, every Celtic fan I knew, other than myself, went down to London for those games against Lyon and Arsenal.
Bizarrely enough, I didn't go either, and I'm not sure why, because, I mean, I'd made plans to go, but I sort of done my usual and cancelled at the last minute. Nor I'd do that with podcasts, of course, listeners. I love yous too much for that. But no, there were big events, and I'm sure if Arsenal or Tottenham decided to do like pre-season tournaments at their stadiums again, and Celtic were invited, the fans would go down in their tens of thousands. I'd definitely go this time. I mean, just so I could go to London, that wonderful city. But no, I vaguely remember these games. I think they were on Sky, but I didn't watch them. I think I just watched the highlights, because even then, I didn't think pre-season was that important. And everybody was in a bit of a panic because we were going to Inverness, first league game of the season, and even then, that was a dodgy place to go. And of course, we'll talk about that in the pod later on. I mean, the results in Europe sort of took away for that, because we did start badly in Europe that season.
Yeah, sadly, we can't just talk about the Emirates Cup for the next half hour. We're going to have to mention Europe. So yeah, Europe was over before we kicked the ball domestically. The Champions League certainly was, and then we found ourselves out of the Europa League as well. So Braga put us out 4-2 on aggregate, and then Utrecht disposed of us very easily at a time when we weren't actually that used to European disgraces, John. Against Braga, I didn't think we were going to be doing anything. To be honest, I felt like Braga were a pretty strong side, and that Celtic team were going to take a few months to gel. I just didn't see us making the Champions League. The season before, of course, the Champions League, it was Arsenal that beat us, I think 5-1 in aggregate, 2-0 Celtic Park, 3-1 the Emirates. Of course, you had that game where Eduardo blatantly dived as well. Awful. Probably wouldn't have made too much of a difference, to be honest with you. But yeah, I remember the Braga game, just getting into that, saying to my uncle at the time when we watched it together, that I just had no faith in the Celtic team getting the result. You know, when you've got rid of big personalities like your Boric's and McGeady, and you're throwing guys in who've barely had any time training together, it's going to be a recipe for disaster, and it was. I think that first leg was 3 going on like 6 or something. Terrible. Second leg, of course, Celtic Park salvaged a bit of pride, beating them 2-1. But it was the Utrecht one for me that was really alarming. Like, I never thought for the rest of the season that it was going to be disastrous, and I never thought that, oh, we're going to see like Mowbray all over again. But you just knew that Celtic, at that time, were still finding their feet. And, you know, I thought to myself, maybe if we actually did sneak a win over Utrecht and went through, if we were in the groups with that team at the time, it would have probably been a massacre as well. So maybe it is a good thing that that team were focusing purely on domestic honours only, especially when you've seen them grow as the season went on and they got confidence, John, from domestic results. Because I think if they had to contend with domestic games and European fixtures, their confidence would have just plummeted, and we would have certainly fallen further behind Rangers.
I mean, I don't devote a lot of time, mate, because we've got a lot to fit into the pod, but Utrecht was really bad, because we won the first leg 2-0 at Parkhead, Juarez and Samaras, and then like we threw it away in a typical Celtic fashion, like gave away two goals in the first 20 minutes, Van Wolfswinkel scored them, then he scored again just after half time, and then they added a fourth near the end with Barry Maguire, who sounds more like a snooker or a darts player than a football player. And I mean, like, the league season had already started, but actually when we go into the league games, we can talk about something interesting. And I know we don't usually talk about things like attendances, but it's quite notable that the fans, I think, were a bit unsure about how good we were going to do that season, because for a lot of the games, we weren't even getting 50,000, which is a shock when you consider nowadays that, well, we supposedly get like at least 55,000 every game. But I think the fans at the start of the Lenny experiment were a bit unsure.
Yeah, so getting into the league campaign then, first 8 games we actually won. I was going to ask you for some highlights for myself. You had the Paddy McCourt winner up at Inverness, where he like dribbled by 5 players, scored, and then I think he done his head, didn't he? You can talk about that a bit more. I think you were mentioning that in the pub. I think the Hooper winner against Dundee United, in a game we'll talk about in more detail, you certainly will. You had the player that massively annoyed me his entire time at Celtic. Well, Lyles said he was a technical genius. Key scored a screamer against St Mirren. We won 4-0. And you had Emilio Izaguirre as well. His performance at Fir Park against Murrayfield stood out. It was a Sunday, I think it was a Sunday after we get beat against Utrecht. I watched that in a pub and I was really impressed with Izaguirre. I remember saying he's going to go on to be a cracking player for us. He certainly was. for a season, but still, people do have fond memories of Emilio. First eight games, John, before we face Rangers at Celtic Park. We won them all. What were your thoughts and what were your highlights of those eight games?
Well, that open game of the season was nervy because I think everybody was a bit panicky we were going to get beat, but Paddy McCourt scored a belter, then, as you say, got injured in the act of scoring. No, I was at that Manila game, which you weren't. All I remember about it was very boring. And the legendary Daryl Murphy scored a rare goal. The Hearts game, I think this will shock you. I think Hearts went mad about offside decisions. I know it's unlike them. I don't really remember much about the Hibs game. Actually, the Hamilton game, I remember that we won 3-1 because Hamilton took the lead in that game. And just before it, Rangers had won at Tynecastle with 10 men. Yes, Rangers, I think I'm right, Rangers actually the guy sent off that day, which I know doesn't happen these days, but shocking stuff. And, of course, the Dungeons United game, Doogiegate, was just insane for a million different ways. A game that I was at, I mean, we scored a 89th minute winner, which is always great to keep pace with Rangers, because Rangers had won every one of their opening league games as well, which set it up nicely for the derby. And it was the Old Firm derby then, because of course it's the old Rangers, not the new Rangers. But yep, Doogiegate was a bit mad, if we want to talk about that now.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky?
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Well, John, you were there, so why don't you remind the listeners of what happened?
Right, so what happened with Doogiegate is, and I'll try and be concise here, Dougie McDonald gave a penalty to Celtic against Dungeons United, then he changed his mind, but then an assistant referee at the game called Stephen Craven came out and said that they lied to Neil Lennon about why the penalty wasn't awarded, and he then resigned about it. He says it was Hugh Dallas, who was the head of referees. He was it was his fault. Hugh Dallas said it wasn't his fault. Then Hugh Dallas, who was the head of referees, ended up losing his job because of a sectarian joke he wrote in an email. Dougie McDonald ended up quitting refereeing as well. Look, Celtic actually went ballistic over it with my namesake, John Reid. And then, after all was said and done, there was a referee strike. The only time there's been a referee strike in all the years I've been watching Celtic, and when you consider all the decisions that have been made in favour of a certain team, it's funny that when a decision goes against Celtic and it was shown to be wrong, that the referee's going strike. Funny that. But I mean, if you want to read more about it, go to the CelticWiki.com and Celtic's Doogiegate, because if we wanted to actually talk about this, it would take about 3 podcasts, because it was genuinely ridiculous and insane. And for once, Celtic were vindicated. People always going about how we're paranoid, and for once, we were right about the referees. Nowadays, it's just other teams that send dossiers to the referees when they're annoyed about decisions. Celtic don't do anything, so there you go. That's a very brief summary of Doogiegate, but it's just too long to go into.
You know, back when they weren't in the Scottish Championship, Dundee United actually gave us really difficult games. And I know you were at the game, so I'll let you speak about it in a second, but that's probably the main highlight from those opening eight matches when we made it 1-0. Gary Hooper was what a great finish, the way that he swept the ball, went to the top of the net to make it 1-0. I think that wonderful guy, David Goodwillie, equalised with a shot deflected, I think maybe off Leuven's or something. Celtic, for the entire second half, just pounded Dundee United with non-stop pressure. They had that goalkeeper, Dusan Pernis, he was excellent against us. But when that goal went in, honestly, the scenes were incredible. I remember just going utterly mad when it went in. Just felt after the penalty controversy as well that it was just really vital that we got that goal. And you're talking it was like in the dying seconds, I think. I'm pretty sure it was in like with 30 seconds or something to play. And one of the things that I noted was anytime Paddy McCourt came on for Celtic in those games, anything he did, it led to a goal. He created so much panic. It was like a tornado of chaos, wasn't it? McCourt was so technical on the ball. It was fantastic to watch. And as soon as he came on, he's getting by those Dundee United players on the left. I think he tries to lift it up to the back post. It hangs up in the air. There's a shot cleared off the line. Comes back in again with Mark Wilson, I think. And Hooper's in the right place at the right time. Just the way I was excited about a right penalty box striker, John. He's doing that when maybe the likes of Marc-Antoine Fortuny and Giorgio Samaras, who if they were deployed as number nines for us under Mowbray, they're not really in that type of position to throw the ball past the goalie, but Hooper was. It was just one of those instinctive finishes, but it must have been so amazing being at the game celebrating that.
Yeah, I mean, it was great being there at the game and everybody went mad when we scored the winning goal. Even me, who, as you know, doesn't get carried away with Celtic. The referee thing didn't make that big an impact because nobody was sure why it had been disallowed. And like, there wasn't as many like sort of, nowadays you just phone somebody or look at that wonderful website X to find out what had happened or text them. But no, it was a great win, and everybody knows that my favourite ever Celtic game was up at Tannadice in 2005 when we beat Dungeon United 3-2, Craig Bellamy with a hat-trick. But that's got to be up there as well because it was so tense, like the desperation to get the goal with Celtic always attacking, and but that doesn't really happen these days, like because we usually get games won early on and there's no real tension. I don't know, maybe back this season, but no, that was a great day and a great win. It set us up nicely for the derby, or rather the Old Firm World Series, as Sky called it, I remember, because we played Rangers 7 times that season, the first and only time that's ever happened.
I remember that season when we played them, every game was so tense and on edge, and like you weren't worn out by the fact that you played them that many times, you know, and whereas I think this season, if we were to play Rangers maybe 7 or 8 times, I'd be like, come on. Did you feel that way?
Well, one of them wasn't tense when we hammered them, but the rest of them were tense because they were such important games. It'll never happen again because there's obviously no cup replays, and unless we somehow end up playing each other in Europe, which I don't think's ever going to happen, but they have 7 derbies in a season like this, we were at tension. That added to the sheer spectacle of the season. The fact that we played Rangers 7 times, just, I mean, I think we played them 6 times last season. And obviously they were all tense, especially the games at Hampden. I mean, the last one didn't matter. That's a different field. That last game last season didn't matter because it was like a dead rubber. But no, every game in this season, all 7 mattered. And they were just games that people will always remember. Maybe not the first one, though.
No, unfortunately, the first one resulted in a 3-1 loss on the 24th of October 2010, a result that I think many people probably weren't shocked with, although the second half capitulation was really disappointing. I think Rangers at that point in the season were significantly better than us. They were also in the Champions League as well. I think they just drew 0-0 with Man United, perhaps. I think in the first game they get beat 1-0, didn't they, at home. They definitely drew 0-0 at some stage with Man United. But you could just tell who the more settled side was out of the two favourites for the league. So that was the first game we played Rangers 6 months ago. John, there's some more 2010 trivia. It was the year the WHO declared the swine flu pandemic over. Do you remember that stupid wee virus?
Vaguely. Is that the one where they ended up having to kill loads of pigs?
Did they? I can't remember that. I just remember my mum and dad came home one time from Turkey. I think they had a flight, like 5 in the morning, and as soon as they came back from Turkey, I said to them, nice to see you, by the way, I might have swine flu, and they went mental at me. They were absolutely going ballistic.
And did you have swine flu, or was it a hilarious joke?
Turned out to just be the humble cold in the end. It wasn't swine flu, so yes, everybody moved on, and we will move on from that, John, because yes, we had the long winter where every Celtic game was a struggle to decide to go to because it felt like -15 from November onwards until the end of January. You had the ref strike as well, and it was foreign referees who were in charge, foreign officials, sorry, were in charge when we drew 2-each with Inverness at the end of November. We were unbeaten, other than a game on November the 10th, 2010, against Hearts at Tynecastle. Very interesting one for you. On that date, Rangers played Hibs at home as well, and they get beat 3-0, while we lost 2-0 at Tynecastle. We did beat Aberdeen 9-0 at the start of November. And John, here's one for you. Can you name all the Celtic scorers from that game?
Gary Hooper get a hat-trick. Anthony Stokes get a hat-trick. Paddy McCourt was one an own goal.
Yes.
I don't know who scored the own goal then. Some Aberdeen jobber. And was Thomas Rogne, did he score?
8 out of 9. I'll give you that. I would not have got anything other than the 2 hat-trick scorers and McCourt. I didn't even realise it was an own goal. And it was Joseph Ledley, John, who scored the other one, so there you go. But yeah, John, after the 9-0 win over Aberdeen, we beat at Tynecastle, and then we were unbeaten, but we did have 4 draws and amongst all the unconvincing wins. What were your memories of the winter of 2010, when, as I said, that every game just felt as if it was Baltic at Celtic Park? It was certainly freezing that particular winter, and of course, we also had a game at Ibrox on the 2nd of January in that time.
Well, we also beat St Mirren 1-0, away from home with a last-minute Gary Hooper goal set up by Paddy McCourt, which was a huge win. But yet we drew 3 home games in a row. I mean, we drew 1 at Dundee United, gave away a goal in like the 94th minute equaliser. Drew 2-each with Inverness when we were leading 2-0 in the second half. And me and my cousin Heather went to see Madness that night. That's the only thing I remember about that. So that Inverness game was the 27th of November, and the weather was that bad. We didn't play again until the 21st of December, when we drew 1-each with Kilmarnock, and I think the coldest game ever, which I didn't go to because it was cold. I'm embarrassed to say. I know you did. But no, I mean, when you look at the end of the season, the 3 draws in a row were really costly, especially drawing 2-each with Inverness when you're 2-0 up in the second half and getting away a 94th minute goal or whatever it was to Dundee United. That's really bad. Kilmarnock, I think we came back to make it 1-each. Connor Salmon scored for Kelly. That really was a missed opportunity, and they would really come back. The results would come back to bite us when you look at what happened at the end of the season. But no, the weather was terrible. I mean, I'm 1-for-foot games, and I think that Kilmarnock game was, I think, one of the coldest games ever at Celtic Park. I'm glad I wasn't there, because I'm not Mr. Celtic, unlike you, who were there.
So the ref who took charge of the game against Inverness for us, what country was he from?
Slovakia.
Wrong, it was Luxembourg. Do you know, in my head, I actually thought it was an Israeli ref, and I'm glad it's not, but I thought it was an Israeli ref, because I know that it was referees from Israel, Eastern Europe, but it turns out, yeah, there was Luxembourg refs as well. And that all came, John, because of the big fallout over Hugh Dallas and Dougie McDonald getting found out, and referees took the huff, despite the fact that they made an absolute arse of the situation.
I'm shocked and stunned that Scottish football referees could be that petty.
That 2-each draw with Inverness, I remember getting food poisoning from Celtic Park after biting into and then stupidly congesting a pie that was not cooked. Absolute nightmare. I was ill for like a few days after that one. Nevertheless, I did have a good Christmas and a decent new year, because the highlight, of course, was a 2-0 win over Rangers. It was Samara Sunday. No one had a clue what day it was in that winter period. I was actually convinced it was a Monday we played them. I didn't realise it was a Sunday. But yeah, I don't think anybody expected that result. And John, that was a game that you had a chance for a ticket for. Like myself, you were convinced that Celtic were going to get hammered. You didn't take a ticket. And what happened?
We won 2-0 in one of your greatest ever wins at Ibrox. It was a bit reminiscent of the game this season against Rangers, where, as you know, I thought we'd get hammered. Although this time was worse, because I still had my season ticket. And this was shocking, your listeners. Back then, for away tickets, Celtic used to send you a letter to tell you that you'd got tickets. And I got offered tickets, and I didn't go and get them. I thought, it's £44 or whatever. We're going to get hammered. I'd rather just watch it in the pub. And then, of course, we won 2-0. One of our greatest ever wins, as I said, at Ibrox. Sammy, we're putting his selling into Celtic folklore with one superb goal, one penalty. But I did make up for it, though, by drinking myself into a vomit-inducing stupor that night, I remember. But no, that was pretty amazing, because nobody saw it coming. We had so many players injured and suspended. Gary Hooper was injured. Scott Brown was suspended after a booting against Motherwell. Nobody gave us a hope. And Lenny, shockingly enough, when you look back at his last Celtic managerial job, came out with some tactical genius. And I mean, he played Paddy McCoy up front. That's, and James Forrest sort of was up front at times as well. That's how stretched Celtic were. But no, an amazing win, an amazing day, and an amazing hangover the next day.
Christmas 2010. What did you ask Santa for?
Right, I don't remember what I get for Christmas really every year. Apart from aftershave, I always get that, and books of my cousins. But no, I no, don't remember 2010. Although I bet you do remember what you got for Christmas in 2010.
I think I was, I had the PlayStation. Is it PlayStation? I had the PlayStation 3 then. So I think I would have got a couple of games. I can't remember. I think my big game was Modern Warfare 2 the year before. But for 2010, I don't actually remember what I got. I don't remember what game it was. I couldn't tell you. I think that was, that's all I was doing, was playing Modern Warfare for like a good 2 years solid, Modern Warfare 2. And then Modern Warfare 3 came out in like 2011. So I think it was just clasing money and just wasted the money on games, crap games for the PlayStation 3, because nothing was as good as Modern Warfare 2. So there you go. Well, John, I'm sure the listeners will be wanting to hear more about my festive experience in 2010 and, of course, New Year of 2011. But we'll have to just end it there because, yes, this has been the end of part one of GigPod Rewind, where we look back at the 2010-2011 season. What a laugh that was in 2011, John. Will be even more of a laugh. I'm sure you can't wait to talk about that in part two.
I'm excited already.
Right, well, thanks for joining me, Reid. So I know you'll be joining me for part two. You won't be leaving me hanging. And I certainly know that Dan won't even remember. He didn't even remember what happened last week, never mind like 10 years ago. But yes, you'll be joining me for part two. So where can everybody listen to part two?
They'll be able to find that next week on the every podcast platform, all the usual places, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, everywhere. And of course, everybody should know to like and subscribe on those websites to build the numbers up even more. And of course, that will be episode 200 next week. What an exciting episode that'll be. And here's what we'll be doing to mark it being episode 200. That's right, nothing. Sorry, listeners. But you can get us on all the usual podcast platforms, you know where. Subscribe. That's what we want you to do on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, on all the other podcast platforms. We need more subscriptions, so get those numbers up. You can catch Stevie on Instagram at GigPod, where he's got loads of great content. Not on Threads, that forgotten website. We will be back next week, episode 200, part 2, Season Rewind, 2010-2011, with loads more insanity, and I genuinely do mean insanity. Right, thanks to you for listening. We'll speak to you all soon. Hope this new audio feed that we're working works out for everybody. Fingers crossed, and hail, hail.
Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky?
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.